The hour of 10:15 having arrived, we'll call the House Tax Committee to order on Wednesday, February the 26th. Representative Smith, would you please move the minutes of February 25th.
I move the minutes of February 25th.
Any additions or corrections? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Smith. So we have a full agenda today, members. We're going to skip around here a little bit. We're still waiting for an amendment for House File 5. So we'll start with House File 9. The gentleman from Lyon, Representative Swazinski, if you could please present your bill. But just a second here. Is there anyone that wishes to testify on behalf of the bill? Do you have any testifiers? Anyone with concerns? And I believe there is an amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I believe that is an issue of concern or something. So it's not my amendment, but I can present the bill first.
Let's present talk the about, bill, and then since it's not your amendment, normally just put it on, but let's...
Yes. No, it is not an author's amendment. So.
Not an author's amendment. Okay.
It's not a bad amendment, but it's just not my idea. So thank you.
If you present your bill, please.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the House Tax Committee. It's a pleasure to be before you today. House File 9 is our attempt for a lights-on bill. While the bill does many different things, it ends a moratorium on nuclear energy. It opens up the possibility of expanded use of hydroelectric power within the state, but one of the primary focuses of the bill when it comes before Tax Committee is the tax portions of the bill. So if you look at the bill that lays before you, it's on line 5.13 through 5.24, and that is primarily the area that deals with residential heating fuel. And across the state, Minnesotans have made the decision that fuel oil, coal, wood, steam, hot water, propane gas, and LP gas sold to residential customers would not be a sales tax throughout the year. In particular area, in two areas, we have not had that exemption put on, and that would be areas of electricity and natural gas. And we do have, if you check your packets, members, we do have a fiscal note that approximately, I believe, nonpartisan staff came up with a number of about $109 million. So currently Minnesotans are spending about $109 million per year for the sales tax for the months of, not excluding the months of November, December, January, February, March, April. All other months, the amount of sales tax that they're spending on this particular portion of their utility bill is about $109 million. And this House File 9 in the tax portion seeks to relieve Minnesotans of that costly burden. So as we've all found from tax incident studies, when we put a tax on corporations or businesses, when applicable, 90 to 95% of those taxes get passed on to consumers. And as Representative Gomez talked about yesterday, that the sales tax is one of the most regressive taxes that we have, and particularly when it comes to foundational use. So when I say foundational use, the things that we use to heat, cool, do our homes, all the things that we do just on a daily level to keep things rolling, sales tax is one of the things we pay. And so whether that's Minnesotans have made a choice not to, to tax groceries or clothing, and coal, wood, steam, hot water, and propane gas and LP, throughout the year. And we're just simply expanding that to, for residential use, when it residential heating fuels of natural gas and electricity. And that's what the bill does, in particular the areas of tax, which would conform that. We can talk about the rest of the bill if you prefer, but I know this bill, this committee is exceptionally busy with the priorities of Minnesota, and I don't want to waste your time. So thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair Swazinski. And members, could you point out again what we're talking about as far as the tax part? Because all the other stuff, we're not going to get into nuclear, we're not going to get into all the, that's for your committee. So what exactly are we talking about? You said page 5?
Yep, so page 5.13 through 5.14. And so we're allowing that the sales tax on natural gas sold for residential use. It's you're not paying sales tax at all on that throughout the year for electric and natural gas.
Okay, Chair Swedzinski, I don't think I'm lining up here. I go to page 5.
5.24, not 1.4.
Down.
Oh, am I? Okay.
Oh, down. Thank you, Chair Gomez. 5.24. That makes more sense. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Any testifiers for the bill? Any testifiers with concerns? Then we'll go right to member questions. Before we do that, does the department wish to weigh in on this?
No.
Okay. If you think you need to, just let me know. So, questions. Chair Gomez.
Well, can we just do my amendment?
Yeah, let's do the amendment.
I was going to
let's do the amendment. Okay, we have the H0009A11 amendment. To your amendment, Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Swedzinski. So the A11 basically takes the tax cut that we would be giving to the general tax cut for the entire year for residential heating fuels, and focuses it on the low income home energy assistance program, and instead puts those dollars into that proven program that really helps to target those Minnesotans who are most impacted by high energy bills. Unfortunately, you know, we've seen a lot of volatility in this program, which I think, you know, historically, both Democrats and Republicans in Minnesota have been really committed to supporting. When there was the blanket kind of freeze of federal funds that was announced and that was subsequently rescinded, you know, there's so many ways that that created chaos in many kind of safety net programs across our country. And the low-income home energy assistance program, or energy assistance as we call it in Minnesota, was one of them. And so, you know, what this does is it you know, if the program, if LIHEAP does not, LIHEAP, is that how I say it?
LIHEAP.
LIHEAP. Thank you, Chair Swedzinski. You can tell I'm not an energy person. My fault. If LIHEAP does not receive federal grant funds, the commissioner calculates the amount equal to the cost and of this exemption and devotes it to that program. And now the reason for I just think, like, in general, Chair, like, that, you know, this is an effort, unlike some of the other things we've seen, to focus on affordability for Minnesotans, and we share that concern. And we know that, you know, obviously the cost of eggs and of housing and of, you know, and of energy are all impacting Minnesotans' bottom lines. But, you know, and you're right that, as I'm always pointing out, the relative regressivity of the sales tax. But I would give some kudos to the department. The newest edition of the tax expenditure budget has, I think it's a new feature where it has a distribution by decile of the kind of like how much of the tax expenditure each decile receives. And so on page 146 of the latest tax expenditure budget is the residential heating fuels exemption. And if you look down at the distribution, you can see that this is a tax that is most heavily paid by the highest income Minnesotans. Because, like, if you're heating a mansion, if you have an indoor pool, if you have a hot tub that you're trying to maintain the temperature of. Not saunas, because I'm pro sauna. No, I'm just kidding. I'm known to be pro sauna, hot tub, and pool personally. But you know, this is a tax exemption that disproportionately goes to the top income earners in Minnesota. And so, what I'm attempting to highlight with the A11 amendment is the fact that there is work to be done on controlling heating bills for Minnesotans. But if we take this approach in House File 9, you know, 30% of that benefit, that $100 million, right, a year, so it's $400 million over the budget window. More than 30% of that would go to the top two deciles. And the bottom, you know, the people who are really struggling the most to make ends meet, single parents, people making minimum wage, people working in the gig industry, would receive very little benefit from this. And so the attempt of the A11 is to you know, if we want to spend $400 million on relieving Minnesotans of the burden of heating bills, then we should do it in a way where it really impacts the people who need it the most. And so that's the intent of the A11, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. So we have House File 9. We have an amendment before C9811 amendment, a discussion to the amendment. And Chair Swazinski, was this going to be sent to where?
I believe the bill goes is the motion is to go to Ways and Means, I believe.
Okay.
Yes.
Discussion to the A11, the Chair Gomez's amendment. Chair Swazinski.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Gomez, for your thoughtful consideration on the bill as a whole and the potential for amendment. You know, I would ask members to vote no. You know, I believe the foundational rule when it comes to government is first get out of the way. Don't look to pass tax dollars through for redistribution. At the end of the day, sales taxes cost customers more. Whether you're heating your house or heating, not your sauna, but whatever that might be. But, you know, we've got a job to do. And the first place that we can, when it comes to energy policy, when it costs of doing government, is not create a situation where we already realize, right, why this bill is before us and why even Representative Gomez has her amendment, is that energy bills are too high. And we have two tacks and two directions to take when it comes to energy policy. The cost of government and the cost of delivering the goods and services that we all need is, one, do we send money to the government first and let them send it out the way they deem fit? Or do we allow folks to keep the dollars in their pocket so that they can invest, they can spend, they can put in to the dollars we need? One of the arguments we heard earlier in committee, I think it was when we were discussing a different bill talking about Social Security, is that one of the members said, well, I'm trying to help my kid because life's getting really quite expensive. And if we do decide not to tax Social Security benefits for the 350 million people that are still paying Social Security, or 350,000 Minnesotans that are still spending that money, that then the government program might get cut so they can't help my kid. Well, how about we just help our kid and get government out of it? And so I think government's jobs need to get out of the way, stop increasing the cost of electricity, of natural gas, so that folks can help their children, help their church, help their family, and have their bills be lower because of the action we take, not because of the government program that we make. And that's why I would ask you to vote no on the Gomez. I appreciate where she's coming from on it. But I think our first step as legislators is, how can government get out of the way? Thank you.
Further discussion. Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Swazinski. So, you know, this is just, the reality is that this low-income heating assistance program that is a lifeline for low-income Minnesotans is on the chopping block. We've seen that across the country. You know, luckily in Minnesota, we have a program that's really strong and that has state support, but other places in the country where this is a lifeline to low-income people, this program has been cut. This is the kind of program that's on the chopping block. And so, you know, I appreciate the conversation, but, you know, it's like, all you have to do is look at this distribution to see who gets the benefit from this $400 million hole that we're going to blow in the side of our already tenuous budget. But with that, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the conversation. I withdraw the amendment. Thanks, Chair Swazinski.
Chair Gomez withdraws the H0009A11 amendment to the bill. Any questions from members? Any? We'll go to closing thoughts, then to Chair Gomez, and then we'll go to Swazinski. But I want to give committee members a chance first here. Okay, let's go to Chair Gomez on the bill.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, House File 9 in general, we're not going to really get into it, but it kind of destroys our 100% clean energy standard that we passed in 2023 after, you know, years of work by many people. It really sets us on a path to having a sustainable and reliable energy future. And so, you know, again, this is going to pass out of this committee. It's going to pass out of Ways and Means. It is going to not get 68 votes on the floor, and it's going to be laid on the table, and we'll take it from there. But it's going to pass out of this committee shortly. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
No, thank you, Chair Gomez. Any final thoughts here, Chair Swedzinski?
Oh, no, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. Just appreciate the opportunity to come before the committee. Vote yes.
Okay, we'll take the vote on House File 9. The motion is to send it to Ways and Means. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Okay, thank you, Chair Swedzinski. We are still waiting on some amendments for House File 5. So let's go to Representative Norris's bill. The Norris-Davids bill. That's got to be good. House File 385. Welcome to your committee, Representative Norris. And if you could please describe the bill, what we're trying to do here.
All right. Thank you, Chair Davids. Appreciate the opportunity to bring this bill before the committee. Some of you may be saying...
I'm sorry, Representative Norris. Representative Norris moves House File 385, and this would be laid over for possible inclusion, I believe.
That's correct.
No, sorry to interrupt you.
That's okay. Thank you, Chair Davids. Appreciate you taking care of that piece of business. Some of you, like Rep. Smith, may say, didn't we hear about coerced debt before? And it is true. We've had a couple of bills in the past, including one in this committee last year that was included in the omnibus bill, didn't actually get across the finish line at the end of session, and so we're back to try to clean up some of these loose ends. So stepping back even further in history, in 2023, I brought a bill that passed with unanimous and bipartisan support, the Coerced Debt Bill. This bill, which is now a national model, addressed the devastating problem of economic abuse of survivors and domestic violence. All too often, survivors of domestic violence are saddled with consumer debt that they did not voluntarily incur. In cases like these, through physical assault, threats, or coercion, survivors are forced to take out credit or loans in their name, but from which they never receive a benefit. When the survivor extricates themselves from the relationship, they are faced with crushing debt and a trashed credit report. The bill we passed in 2023 allows these survivors to go to court and have a court declare that they do not owe this coerced debt. After the bill passed into law, we found that this money no longer owed could potentially be considered canceled or forgiven, which means that the survivor would then need to declare it as income and have a tax liability if the creditor issued a 1099-C. Of course, that wasn't our intent. It would be absurd and a most unintended development. So while this might not actually happen, we confirmed with the Department of Revenue that it would be considered taxable income and asked for technical assistance to draft a bill that would clarify that if the survivor uses the judicial process that we set up in the 2023 bill to get relief on that debt, it cannot be considered taxable income, nor can it be considered income for the renter's credit or property tax credit purposes either. So this is the bill before you today. I want to thank the Department of Revenue for their immediate help when we asked for their technical assistance on this bill, and I ask for your support. Next to me is Ron Elwood from Legal Aid, with whom I worked on the coerced debt bill, and this particular bill as well, and he is here to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Elwood, would you like to make a few comments? I want you to get paid your mileage, so...
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. I really just want to thank Representative Norris for carrying the underlying bill and for carrying this bill both last year and this year. And really want to echo his thanks to the Department of Revenue, because when we reached out to them and realized that this could possibly occur, they were immediately receptive, helpful, and the bill language before you is really a product of their technical assistance. So I really hope you can support it again this year, and I'm happy to answer any questions, and thanks very much, Mr. Chair and members.
Any questions for Mr. Elwood? I have one for Representative Norris. You, I want to get this straight here. You said the department said that the way the law is now, it would be considered income. They get a 1099-C.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay, that's a little spooky. Okay. Further questions for the author? Representative Harder. Jacob, you got to talk.
Next time I'll jump down. Thank you, Chair Davids. I just have a question. This bill, does this apply to people who are single or married, both? Can you just let me know what that would be? Thank you.
Representative Norris or Mr.
Chair
Elwood?
Davids, Representative Harder, it is both. I don't have the exact definitions that we used in the 2023 bill at the top of my head, but it is designed to be all-encompassing.
Mr. Elwood?
Mr. Chair and Representative Harder, it all goes back to what the definition of domestic violence is, and if you look at, and there's cross-reference in the underlying bill, and that it means you have to be in some sort of domestic relationship. So it, you know, the married single thing, the answer would be yes, but it would have to be a couple people who were already involved in a domestic relationship.
Representative Harder?
Thank you, Chair. Fantastic. Thank you for sharing that.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the person who would qualify this would have to have some sort of proof they have been in a domestic situation or that they were forced to take this credit out, or so does that mean like police reports? What does that mean exactly?
Mr. Elwood.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, I know you weren't here when the underlying bill was passed. And so this is really an offshoot of what the underlying bill is. And in that case, the answer is yes. In order to even get here in the first place, in order to have that debt relieved that might even be possibly considered income, you would have had to go to court. And there's a series of proofs that you would have to present, including that you were in a relationship that involved domestic violence, and that debt that you're trying to get relieved was in fact coerced or resulted from threats or violence or anything like that. The survivor, the victim, did not voluntarily incur that debt. And so the short answer to your question is yes, there had to be proof, but not for the tax liability. If in order to get the relief from this bill, they'd already have to have a court order saying they don't owe that money.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions for the author or for Mr. Elwood? Okay, Chair Gomez, you want to wrap her up here? We're good? Okay, final thoughts? Oh, excuse me, is there anyone from the audience who wishes to testify for the bill or with concerns? The department would like to make any comments, or are we on track here? We're good. Okay, thank you. We are good. Come to think of it. Yeah, okay. Representative Norris, if you want to wrap it up.
Yes, thank you, Chair Davids, and thanks for the committee's time. Thank you for co-authoring this bill with me. I think it's indicative of the broad bipartisan support that this issue has garnered in 2023 and 2024, and hopefully that can continue this year, and we can get it into our tax bill and finally get this squared away.
Thank you. So Representative Norris moves that House File 385 be laid over for possible inclusion in what's going to be just an awesome tax bill. Thank you. Okay, item next. Let's go to Representative Joy, if we could. Okay, now members, Representative Joy, are these amendments not his, right? So we'll wait till...
No.
Oh, all three are authors' amendments. Okay, so Representative Joy, welcome to your committee. Generally what we do is we like to get the bill in the shape the author would like, and we do have... well, first of all, tell us a little bit about your bill, and I really want to concentrate on things that we really haven't talked about before. So, you know, we've done Social Security here, some different things, but, I mean, we'll be open for questions, but... So if you could give a brief presentation of your bill, doesn't have to be brief, presentation of your bill, and then we'll go to the amendments, and then we'll go to testimony, and then we'll go to member questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members.
I brought snacks for my bill, so everybody can kind of keep
you are a very wise man.
Entertained. What this bill does is makes Minnesota affordable and finishes the promises that we had to do. It's repealing Social Security tax for everybody. It's the delivery tax or fee, whatever three-letter word we want to use it for. It's getting rid of that. You know, when we talk about, you know, hurting people and affecting lower incomes and people that are barely getting by, we put fees on the bills, or we put, I call them taxes. I don't like using the word fees because it's a tax no matter what. But we're putting them on the bills, and it's affecting those people. And it's time that we quit taxing and feeing, and it's time we do some cuts. The other part of this bill is the automatic gas inflator. They passed a automatic gas inflator, so the gas tax automatically goes up. I feel as legislators, it's our job to sit down here and decide if things should go up or down. It shouldn't just be automatic to have the government continue to grow taxes. And then the last part of this bill is talking about studying our tab fees. Our tab fees went up 36%, affecting every income class. 36% it went up. And I think that's something we got to do, is look at our surrounding states and take a good look into this and figure out where we going to need to be and where we're comparative on this. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Look forward to this bill.
Thank you. And let's get the bill in the shape the author would like, and then we will go forward with questions. So any particular order, Representative Joy, you wish to move these? How about we go in order, like 11, 12, 13, or is that okay?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Joy has moved, House File 5. And members, this would go to?
Transportation.
So it's got a few steps to go here. So could you please move the 9A11 amendment and explain what it does?
The A10 amendment, this amendment addresses some concerns.
11. Yep.
What's that?
11.
The 11 we're moving?
Have 10, 11. I've got 11, okay. 12, and 13.
Okay. This amendment is a technical amendment, prevents a double appropriations of the Social Security.
Any discussion to the 9A11 amendment?
No.
Okay, let's make sure we got the amendments correct here. Oh.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Gomez?
I think that the Representative Joy might be describing the A-12 when he refers to Social Security benefits, and we're talking about the A-11, which is the appropriations given effect once amendment.
Okay. Let's do the 5A-1-2 amendment.
Okay.
So, Representative Joy, what was that again?
The
Social Security benefits?
The A-12? Yeah.
A-12.
Yeah, this is a technical amendment to the one implemented in HF-100 to confirm clarity the definition of Social Security benefits.
Discussion to the amendment that Representative Joy has moved. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Which one would you like next, Representative Joy?
A-13.
Let's go to A-13, members. Could you please describe that amendment, then we'll open it up for questions. First of all, is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for the bill or with concerns? We will take testimony. Oh, okay. We'll do that when we get the bill and shape the author like. Okay, to the A-13 amendment, Representative Joy.
A-13 is backfilling the delivery fee by doubling the electric vehicle fee, by moving the blackout plates to the trunk highway, 50% of that, and the TA. And,
Mr. Chair. Representative Joy, that's why this is going to transportation.
Right.
Okay.
And making the counties and small cities and stuff whole, moving the numbers around with this. And then also taking $7 million from the blue line and moving into this to backfill this.
Okay. Questions for the author on the amendment? Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of observations. So the A-13 was posted last night, but the revenue note that we have in our packages only goes through the A-12 amendment, doesn't include the impact of this. So I presume that this is one of the reasons why this is going to go back to transportation. We just received a handout from House Fiscal Analysis, but the the revenue note from revenue definitely says this includes the impact proposed as amended by the A10 and A12.
Ms. Templin.
Madam Chair, Representative Elkins, there were two revenue estimates distributed last night by the Department of Revenue for House File 51E, and the there was one estimate with the House File 5 with the A12 amendment and the A13 amendment, and that is the estimate that you have before you. That is the most current estimate for the hearing.
Representative Elkins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a transportation geek, and so I stayed up late last night watching for stuff and came in early this morning to look for stuff as well. So we're just not getting a lot of time to analyze this carefully. So I'm happy that we're sending it back to transportation so that this can be looked at in more detail.
So you read this stuff last night?
I did.
I didn't. That's why I'm paying such close attention right now. So, but thank you for that. So, any other questions or comments on the E13 amendment? Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to clarify on page 3. I think the author mentioned that he takes $7 million from the blue line, but wanted to look at lines 3.1 and 3.8. Is it actually $30 million if you – is it just 7 – okay, it's just $7 million. And then what happens with the rest of the project, I guess? Is your plan.
Representative Joy?
I'm going to default that.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Chair and members, Andrew Lee from House Fiscal Staff. So the underlying House File 5 doesn't have a change to the blue line general fund appropriation. What is changed in the A13 amendment starting on page 2, line 2.23 through 3.13 is taking some of the appropriation that was for blue line that was appropriated in the 2023 session and then was further modified in the 2024 session. So there was three pieces of that original appropriation. The first was $10 million that the council could immediately use for project development of the blue line, and then $10 million was modified in 2024 for anti-displacement activities. So the remaining $30 million is available to the Metropolitan Council once full funding grant agreement would be in place. It's essentially the last in money for the project. What the A13 amendment proposes to do is take $17 million from that $30 million pot and put it towards the transportation advancement account.
Representative Lee?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. So it's taking $17 million, not $7 million, right?
Okay. Mr. Lee? Yeah.
Mr. Chair and members, correct, yes.
Representative Lee?
Thank you, Chair. Just wanted that clarification. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions on the A13 amendment? Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Davids. And maybe if we could have Mr. Lee just kind of walk through the different revenue changes and allocations that are outlined on this fiscal analysis. I'm particularly interested in kind of an explanation of lines 66 through 71 and what that's all doing.
Mr. Lee, to the Norris question.
Mr. Chair and members, in your packet is a spreadsheet titled House File 5. Representative Joy, the A13 amendment, and it is dated 2/25/2025 at 4:07 p.m. So this is a spreadsheet of both the underlying House File 5 and the A13 amendment. So the first few sections relate to the general fund impact. Lines 3 through 5 relate to the Social Security subtraction. Then on lines 7 through 13, 7 through 12, are tax interactions as a result of the proposed change to the gas tax indexing. In the 2023 legislative session, there was a change to the gas tax law that had the gas tax index to a measure of inflation, and the proposal in House File 5 would freeze that indexing at the level that it is at this year. Because of that freeze, there are two general fund tax interactions that relate to payments for counties with casinos and tribal tax agreements. Any change in the gas tax relates to these two general fund statutory appropriations. So this is because the gas tax wouldn't increase, those payments wouldn't need to be made in those two statutory appropriations. Then on lines 15 through 28 is the Transportation Advancement Account, which is a transportation formula that allocates money largely to local units of government, but also to food delivery support nonprofits. And I show this table, lines 15 through 28, as this is what the current law is. So it is currently funded on lines 18 and 19 through a combination of the delivery fee and a phase-in of the auto sales tax related to auto parts, or the sales tax related to auto parts. That's on lines 18 and 19. And then the allocation formula is on lines 23 through 28. The proposed change in House File 5, as modified by the A13 amendment, starts on line 66, where the delivery fee is eliminated starting July 1st, 2025, so that's fiscal 2026, and so you can see on line 66, there's 1 month remainder, that is the collections from June, and then it is eliminated. There's no change on line 67 to the auto, the sales tax on auto parts. And then there are four items that backfill the reduction from the delivery fee, partly. On line 68 redirects a general fund transfer to the active transportation account to the TAA. On line 69, this is the blackout plate revenue that under current law is going to a DVS special revenue account. On line 70 is an increase to the electric vehicle surcharge, and that increase is directed towards the transportation advancement account. And then, as mentioned earlier, on line 71 is the one-time general fund transfer from the previous appropriation for Blue Line Light Rail. Then the formula is proposed to be changed on lines 75 through 80. On the next page is the interaction you can see on line 114 with the gas tax rate cap. So this is the change from current law. And then there's two tax interaction or a tax interaction on line 116 and a change related to the electric vehicle surcharge on line 115. So you can see the net impact on the highway user tax distribution fund on line 117. And then as a result of the changes to the highway user tax distribution fund from line 117 and the formula changes to the TAA on lines 75 through 80, the net impact to the various local road aids and the trunk highway fund is on line 127 through 132. So you can see small cities, the trunk highway fund, county state aid highway and the TAA fund money it gets, and then cities over 5,000 in population, townships, and turnbacks. There's a further change, so if you go back to line 75, there's an elimination of the 7-county metro area road or TAA aid under that formula, and there's a change proposed to the allocation of the 0.75% metro area sales tax that you can see the current law distribution on line 138 and 139 and the proposed distribution on line 141 and 142. So you can see the net change is the metropolitan counties get $47 million more and metro area transit gets $47 million less in the first year. That's on line 144 and 145. And you can see the net impact to the metro counties on line 148. And that's the spreadsheet.
Rep. Sam Norris.
Wow.
Thank you, Chair Davids, and thank you, Mr. Lee. That was really helpful. I want to make sure I'm understanding it. So first on the transportation advancement account, if I'm understanding correctly, currently for like fiscal year 26 to 27, the total revenue going into that account would be almost 148 million. And after the proposed changes, it would only be 115 some million. Is that correct, Mr. Lee?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Norris, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Norris. And one last question then. On the backside, the HUTD, it looks like there's going to be a reduction because of this bill and the proposed amendment to the HUTD of $35 million in 26-27 and a reduction of $102 million in 28-29. Is that correct?
Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair and Representative Norris, that's correct. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Freeberg?
Thank you, Mr.
Freiberg.
Chair.
Sorry.
It's fine. I don't even know.
I was thinking Leonard Skinner Freeberg.
Good song. I can play it for you on the piano sometime if you like. More just of a comment. I mean, this is just kind of a Frankenstein bill that throws a bunch of random things at the wall. Now it's got all these transportation provisions, including cutting the Blue Line funding, which is just a continuation of what we saw on the House floor earlier this week, where people who don't live in Blue Line communities are making it harder for low-income people to access public transportation. You know, when, on the floor the other day, I went over the hometown of the authors of that bill that we were considering. It was House File 14. You know, I took a look at the co-authors quickly of this bill right now. I didn't have time to look up all of their hometowns, but I can say with confidence that there's nobody who represents a Blue Line community in there. And I just think both this amendment that we're discussing right now that takes funding from the Blue Line and the underlying bill are deeply flawed, and there's no way I can support them.
Thank you. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, again, being a new player on the team here, I have a question that might be obvious, but I'm not seeing it. Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, Joy. Okay. I want you to be Irish. I noticed the electrical vehicle tax has increased. Yesterday, I had the opportunity to meet with one of our major city fire departments, and they are getting cut almost $1 million this year just because of various things. And I'm concerned because one of their ways they're trying to make up for these cuts, and I'm hearing from first response agencies all over the state investigating this, is the electrical vehicle implementation into first response. In this particular city, actually put one in already, and they're seeing savings already. Are electric vehicles for municipalities or local governments, are they exempt from any of this, or maybe am I off base here? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Joy.
I would, you know, when cities buy things, they're always tax-free on that. And so, you know, I would assume that they would be exempt from any of that tax when cities are buying things, or they're buying loaders, or they're buying different equipment. So if the fire department's involved in the city, I would.
Mr. Chair, can we ask staff?
Yes, let's, who would like to handle that one? Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members, Matt Burris with House Research. So the electric vehicle surcharge under current law is imposed in addition to the motor vehicle registration tax on passenger automobiles. So the EV surcharge isn't on all vehicles, it's just passenger automobiles that are subject to the general passenger vehicle registration tax.
Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That answers my question.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Joy, do you know, can you tell us what the basis is for the doubling of the EV registration surcharge? Because every study I've ever read on that subject says that if you consider the combination of all fuel charges and registration fees of all kinds, electric vehicles are already paying more on average than internal combustion engine cars. Where did the $150, did the doubling of it to $150 come from? How was that calculated?
Representative Joy.
So, you know, today we all pay fuel tax. The average Minnesota pays about $200 fuel tax a year. And the EV cars, which are a heavier vehicle, weigh more, use the roads more, are paying $75. I think going to $150 is exactly where it needs to go. I would like to see a little higher, but we are one of the lower states charging that fee.
Professor Velkas. A follow-up, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, the studies I've read, and I can send a link to members on this, is that on average, EVs are driven between 25 and 30% fewer miles than gasoline-powered cars. And if you're, you know, people who are driving small EVs like Nissan Leafs or Chevy Bolts drive about half as many miles as a typical ICE car is driven. So I don't know where you come up with the idea that EVs are driven more miles. Plus, I've also done, this will surprise no one, research into with the impact of weight on road damage. And that relationship is logarithmic, it's not linear, and until you begin to approach the design weight of the road, which is for Minnesota for the most part 10 tons per axle, the difference between, say, a 2,000-pound compact car and a 4,500-pound F-150 or Tesla Model S is negligible. And again, until you get close to 10 tons per axle, the difference of vehicle weight on road damage is negligible.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. Representative Joaquin.
Mr. Chair, actually, my question is to the overall bill. Sorry.
Okay, we'll come back to that. Yeah. Okay, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair. I was actually going to ask about the EV fee as well, so I think for now I'll just leave my comments by saying that you've said a couple times in this committee and other committees that you're going to backfill this. And at least with this amendment, it's backfill normally means you fill up what is lacking, but this is just putting a little bit less cut, but overall this is still gutting so many of our transportation funds. That means real projects across the state will not happen if this bill goes into effect with this amendment that I assume we're about to pass. So that's all.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I have a question about this spreadsheet. So maybe this is for Mr. Lee, but I'm looking, so lines, you said lines 23 through 28 are current law, and then 66 through 71 basically are the proposed changes in the A13. That's right?
Mr. Lee?
Okay.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gomez.
Okay. Okay, so I'm kind of shocked here, I'm going to be honest. So what you're saying that you're doing, Representative Joy, you are zeroing out the 7-county metro area from this entire pot of money? That's for Representative Joy. Look at line 75, 0%. It goes from line 23, 36% of that pot going to the 7-county metro area. Line 75, 0% going to the 7-county metro area? Is that for real?
Representative Joy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Lead Gomez, we are backfilling with the sales tax. So it's not just walking them off the bridge. It's backfilling it with the sales tax on the back page here.
Chair Gomez.
So it's on the, is there a place where you backfill it on the back page that I'm missing?
Mr. Lee, can you help us out here?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gomez, on page 2, lines 134 through 148, the current law allocation between the Metropolitan Council and the Metro Counties is on line 138 and 139. And the proposed change in the amendment is on line 141 and 142, which decreases the amount going to the Metropolitan Council for transit and increases the amount going to Metropolitan Counties. So you can see those changes on line 144 right. and 145.
Thank you, Mr. Lee, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So, yeah, I understand that, but that's money that we already have. So what you're saying, you are cutting 55% of the population of Minnesota lives in the 7-county metro area, and you're proposing to completely cut more than half of the state out of the TAA allocations?
Representative Joe?
I don't think it's completely cutting. It's not zero like you're using. We have it covered in the back.
There
is a reduction. That yes,
it's literally
Chair
going
Gomez.
From Mr. Chair. It's going from 36% of the allocation out of the TAA to 0% out of the allocation of the TAA. I mean, listen, I know it's like we all like beat up on the metro area, right? It's like sort of a sport around here. But can you imagine if I brought forward a bill that cut $50 million that zeroed out Greater Minnesota out of a transportation policy? Can you imagine if I did that? I mean, I'm sorry that I'm getting a little bit upset, but this is like, you're talking about cutting $150 million out of the area where 55% of our population lives, where more than 60% of our tax revenue across the state comes from the seven-county metro area. It's all fine and good to like beat up on Minneapolis and St. Paul, but guess what? I wish that Chair Lissegaard were here and he could make his case about how the entire state relies on the metro core. We are the economic driver of the entire state of Minnesota. Money goes, my taxpayers are net contributors, like we are in Minnesota in the federal tax picture. So as we have all these cuts coming down, Minnesota is a net contributor to the federal tax system, and Minneapolis and St. Paul and the seven county metro are net contributors to our tax system. So the idea that we would completely zero out $150 million out of the TAA to go to like where the people are in our state is absolutely absurd. And I'm just going to say, if I were going to propose this for Greater Minnesota, it would be like a giant scandal. And so I'm also curious, Representative Joy, about did you take care of the seniors and Meals on Wheels in your updated allocation in A13?
Representative Joy.
As far as the Meals on Wheels was zeroed out in this bill, right? Lee?
Mr. Lee? Mr. Chair and members, the original TA formula on line 28 has 1% of the TA formula going to food delivery support nonprofit grants, and the proposal does not include that percentage allocation on line 80.
Chair Gomez?
All right. So we're cutting $150 million from 55% of the population of the state of Minnesota for our transit needs, right, our transportation needs. And then we're literally cutting a lifeline for senior citizens who need help with food support. That's what we're doing here. It's not very nice, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. A follow-up on that, Representative Joy? Or? Okay. So we have the 5A13 amendment from the forest. Any other comments? Does the department, would they like to testify in the...
We'd like to request a roll call on the A13 that cuts Meals on Wheels.
There will be a roll call.
Thank you.
Would the department like to get in on this one? I don't blame you. Yeah. So. Okay, so let's go to any other discussion before the committee legislative assistant takes the roll. The committee legislative assistant will take the roll.
Davids?
Aye.
Joy?
Aye.
Gomez?
No.
Anderson?
Aye.
Elkins?
No.
Freiberg?
Hell no.
Hansen?
Absolutely not.
Harder?
Aye.
Herr?
No.
Hewitt?
No.
Johnson?
Aye.
Kozlowski?
Gawee, no.
Lee?
No.
Roach?
Aye.
Robbins?
Aye.
Schwartz?
Aye.
Smith?
No.
Stevenson?
No.
Swedinsky?
Aye.
Warwas?
Aye.
Wiener?
Yes.
Witte?
Aye.
Wyakeem?
No.
There being 12 ayes and 11 nays, the 5A13 amendment is adopted. And the last amendment is the 5A11. Two-year amendment. Representative Joy.
The last amendment is the A11.
Yes.
And that's
Representative Joy moves the 5A11 amendment.
Yes. And that, all that does is, again, that is, this amendment is technical amendment to prevent double appropriation. So in year 2025, it just inserts the language on page 10 after line 18.
Okay, any questions on the A11 amendment for members? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, we now have the bill in the shape the author would like. I do not see any more amendments at all. So now, why don't we get into testimony here, and you'll state if you're supporting or not supporting it. So thank you, Mr. Lee. Appreciate it. I'd hang around maybe if you would. Let's go Aurora Vautrin, Legislative Director 100%. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, and provide your testimony.
Chair
on the
Davis.
Bill as amended.
Chair Davids, members of the committee, my name is Aurora Vautrin, and I'm the Legislative Director for 100%. Thank you for the opportunity to share our concerns on HF5, a bill that would have devastating consequences for the transportation system we all use and we all need. The transportation bill passed in 2023 made desperately needed and long overdue investments. It wasn't just a transit bill or a roads and bridges bill. It was a holistic package for the system that keeps Minnesotans connected to each other, to work, and everywhere we need to go. Our transportation system is critical infrastructure that we must maintain and improve for the health, safety, and ability for Minnesotans to thrive. As we enter an uncertain time with the future of federal funding becoming less certain every day, with our current budget projection putting us in a deficit in fiscal years 28 and 29, and MnDOT's gap funding report estimating a $17.8 billion funding gap over the next 20 years, now is not the time to cut transportation revenue. We strongly oppose halting the indexing of the gas tax, repealing the delivery fee, and the reallocation of any of the metro area sales tax. We need all options on the table. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Vautrin, is it? Vautrin. Okay, any questions for Ms. Vautrin? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. The next person, John Thorson, if you could join us, please. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Thorson. I'm Legislative Director for LIUNA Minnesota, North Dakota. We're Minnesota's infrastructure union, representing more than 14,000 skilled construction laborers who, along with our brothers and sisters in the trades, build and maintain our roads, highways, bridges, critical utilities that allow our community to thrive. I'm here to speak today on behalf of the operating engineers, iron workers, carpenters, and cement masons, who along with LIUNA are the five building trades who build and maintain our state's highways, roads, bridges, and to share our concerns with the transportation provisions in House File 5. Minnesota's transportation infrastructure needs are great. We have over 600 deficient bridges and nearly 5,000 miles of highway rated in poor condition. We strongly oppose eliminating, reducing, and delaying existing revenue streams that are dedicated to road and bridge funding. In fact, increasing and continuing to diversify long-term and dedicated funding will be critical for effectively planning, construction, and maintenance for our transportation system. LIUNA supports increasing transportation funding to continue catching up and keeping up with our roads and bridges, and would further support eliminating the exemptions of food and beverage orders and removing the $100 fee or limit on the transportation delivery fee. These investments make Minnesota's roads safer, they boost our economy, and they create and maintain family-supporting construction careers in every corner of the state. We wish to build roads and bridges, and if they're in your community, I suspect you'd like us to do that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thorson. Any questions for Mr. Thorson? Thank you very much. Now I have Ms. Madden and Capital Work. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify for the bill as amended or with concerns? Okay, welcome to the committee, Ms. Madden. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. I'm testifying today in opposition to replacing our state's current approach to Social Security tax exemption with an unlimited exemption. We all share the concerns about the challenges that some Minnesota seniors are facing. However, an unlimited Social Security exemption is not a good solution to that problem. Targeted policies specifically focused on the challenges that seniors and other Minnesotans face would be a more cost-effective approach. Federal and state tax laws already provide broad income tax exemptions for Social Security benefits, and the 2023 tax bill greatly expanded our state's exemptions. In 2025, married couples with adjusted gross income up to about $108,000 and single filers with incomes up to $85,000 pay no state income tax on their Social Security income. Folks receive some state Social Security exemptions until their incomes reach about $144,000 for married couples and more than $120,000 for singles, and everyone has at least a 15% federal tax exemption on their Social Security income. As a result of the 2023 expansion, it is estimated that today nearly 80% of all Minnesota families that receive Social Security income do not pay state income taxes on those benefits. And the amount of tax reductions that Minnesotans currently receive from our existing Social Security exemptions is large and growing. In 2024, our current tax exemptions for Social Security income were $716 million, and by fiscal year 2027, that figure is expected to grow to $875 million. If this bill were enacted, higher income seniors would receive tax cuts simply because Social Security benefits are one of their sources of income. This proposal would cost $806 million in the 26-27 biennium and nearly $900 million in 28-29. This expensive tax cut would come at a time when we are facing projected state budget shortfall in 2028-29 and when federal policymakers are considering drastic cuts in funding for health care, other funding for states, and other crucial services. This bill will make it substantially more difficult to protect public services that Minnesota seniors count on, such as community-based care to stay in their homes, transit to get to shopping or to the doctor, or high-quality nursing home care. It's the most struggling seniors who would feel the greatest harm from the cutbacks in services that would be needed to pay for these tax cuts. Instead, we ask you to maintain Minnesota's existing approach to Social Security exemption so that you can better protect the public services that Minnesota seniors, as well as their children, grandchildren, and neighbors count on. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Madden. Any questions for Ms. Madden? Thank you very much. Now we'll go to Mr. Kappa Rourke. If you could please state your name, which I just did, I guess, but who you represent for the record. I'm trying to figure out how to get around that one. Tell us who you are, my friend. So,
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Kappa Rourke. I'm the Executive Director of Minnesota Association of Small Cities. We advocate on behalf of the over 700 cities with populations under 5,000. We are here, we want to work with Representative Joy regarding the TAA's distribution for small cities allocation. For a long time, Minnesota small cities received no direct, were the only local government unit to receive no direct support for our transportation needs. 2 years ago, the legislature passed the TAA, and for the first time, Minnesota small cities received dedicated funding. Unfortunately, we have not received the amount of money that we had expected. I will draw your attention to line on the spreadsheet, line 76 of Mr. Lee's spreadsheet, and you will see that there is an amount of $3 million in fiscal year 24. That represents the when the revenues are collected by the Department of Revenue and then subsequently Department of Transportation and Revenue, not when they are dispersed. Due to an interpretation by the Department of Transportation, there's a one-year delay. So initially, after the after the bill 2 years ago, we expected to receive approximately $24 million in the current biennium, of which we then were going to only receive $3 million. Last year, there was a one-time appropriation of $11 million to try to bump that money up. And now with the retail delivery fee falling below projections, we are falling either further behind. We are, frankly, agnostic as to the source of revenue that funds, that is dedicated to funding our roads, but what our cities have said is we need a reliable, dedicated source that has some level of growth. So we appreciate Representative Joy's attempt at keeping us whole and finding revenue sources that are more reliable. We understand that this will be an ongoing discussion, but we urge members that small cities were once assured that we were taken care of, and we have been falling behind ever since then. And so we need to try to find a way that our cities can reliably use these revenues as they plan their transportation, to meet their transportation needs into the future.
Thank you, Mr. O'Rourke. Any questions for Mr. O'Rourke? Thank you very much. Now we'll go to member questions, and just to kind of get a lay of the land here, it's 11:20. Tomorrow's meeting, a couple very exciting bills, especially House File 1277. That's the David's bill on data centers. Shouldn't be much controversy there. And then House File 1006, a Norris bill, property tax abatement. Now, if we are unable to get these done during regular committee time, we do have a room for tomorrow night from 6 to midnight. 6 to midnight. Okay. Let's see if, as a committee, we can work together and not have to go there. But that's up to all of us, so I guess. So let's go to the bill as amended. Questions from members. I have Chair Youkim on the list first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll try to be quick. Because this bill is very interesting. It's like moving the deck chairs around on the Titanic. I have a question for Representative Joy. Do you know the last time we voted to raise the gas tax?
Representative Joy?
I do not have this at that time.
We voted actually.
Chair Ulicki?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, it was an override in 2008 after the I-35W bridge fell down in 2009. And it's not for the lack of trying. In the Senate, they had a bill in 2013 and 2015, and in the House, they had a bill in 2018. And the reason why this sticks with me is that I was a Senate staffer in my second year when the bridge fell down. And my senator was working on a bill to help get money to the survivors, because at the time we had an individual cap on a suit against the state and an aggregate cap that would have given people on the bridge maybe $30,000, even the 13 that died. 145 were injured. And all of you have legislative assistants, and you know that we're the first ones at the desk when visitors come. And I spent 9 months talking to the folks that were injured and the families of the survivors. And wow, that was hard. What they did was harder. When Senator Latz was putting together the bill, we looked at the workman's comp model, because they have these cute little formulas to tell you how much it costs if you lose a pinky or how much it costs if you break a leg. It was really hard, though, to match up the survivors with their injuries and the cars they were in, because it was such a large catastrophe. But Star Tribune had this graph and a picture where you could click on the car and see who was in it and what their injuries were, and then you had to kind of match up the stories I've been hearing with the people. And there's so many people I remember. I think of two in particular, Paula Evanson. She was driving a Hirschfield van. She was an interior designer, and her van took a plunge headfirst in one of the bank embankments, and she fractured her face, broke some vertebrae. She was one of the 12 more seriously injured. She couldn't be an interior designer again because she couldn't look down. I think of Garrett Ednett. He was the worst injured besides those who were killed. He was found floating down the river face first. Somebody along the trail pulled him out. He had every bone in his face fractured. He had broken arms, broken legs. I cannot even remember how many bones broken. I just want to say this because there were numbers behind those, there were names behind those numbers. And this bill disinvests in an already crumbling infrastructure that we have. The American Society of Civil Engineers rated in 2021 our bridges still at a C and our roads at a D+. Now, I understand what you're trying to do, and you talk a lot about trying to make life more affordable for Minnesotans. Disinvestment didn't make life more affordable to the people that were on the I-35W bridge that day. And this bill will not make our roads safer for the future Minnesotans. So thank you for letting me share that, and I'll be voting no.
Thank you, Representative Joachim. Chair Joachim. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Joy, for bringing the bill. And I get where you're going here, but I have major concerns because we are still going to have ongoing infrastructure problems around the state in the metro area. And with these cuts that are proposed here, we're still going to have to fix the critical ones. As Chair Joachim said, we had the bridge, but we have many bridges that have to be shut down and fixed. I have some in my area. We all have them in our area. And when they have to cost shift or move money around, the ones that usually have to pay the price, and I'm going there again, is our first responders. First responder budgets get hit all the time, and we're not just talking about EMS or fire. We're also talking about law enforcement. Law enforcement is struggling. We have finally got a hold, and we've done some great things as legislators to get law enforcement where they have to go. But now we're proposing more cuts that affect them, not only in Metro, but around the state. These cuts, if we're doing our transportation cuts, will directly affect our state troopers, which struggle every year to try to get even, they're not even at par with their wages now. So I have big concerns, and I cannot support these kind of cuts. I would love to, but there are too many needs out there, especially in the first responder area. And when we do cuts at this level, they always get down to that level. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Joy, for bringing the bill. But I hope you can understand why I can't support it.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to have several questions here. Going to Section 8 of the bill first, that section amends the distribution of revenue from the regional transportation sales tax so that 74% is directed to Met Council, down from 83%, and 26% is dedicated to the suburban counties, which is an increase from 17%. So if we go back to the history here. If you look at the distribution of revenues from the Highway Trust Fund, historically the metro area has paid in about 55% of the revenues going into the trust fund while only getting about 40% back. Historically, that was offset by the fact that the metro area would typically get a general fund allocation to fund transit. And if you looked at the balance of highway revenues plus transit revenues, it came out pretty balanced. But that stopped, you know, the general fund allocation to transit pretty much stopped a number of years ago. And so last session, we for the first time enacted a metro sales tax of 0.75% to provide a permanent and stable source of funding for transit in the Twin Cities region. And the percentage allocations from that were carefully negotiated and reflected the fact that that Metro Transit, the Met Council, would be assuming a much larger share of the transitway operating costs that had previously been borne by the counties. So there's a letter in the package from the Met Council about this, and this reallocation of revenue from Met Council to the suburban transit providers effectively blows a huge hole in the Metro Transit operating budget, and it's a violation, I think, of the agreement among all of the parties involved about how that revenue should be allocated. And the question I would have on this one for the author is, what is the basis for that change in the allocation?
Representative Joy.
Thanks, Chair Davis. Thank you, Representative. You know, as we work through this in transportation, this bill, it's interesting we're here in taxes now, and I know it's going back to transportation, but I asked everybody to come and talk to me about changes or things we can do on this bill, and I've had zero people come and talk to me. Zero. You know, in transportation, nobody came to talk to me about this bill. And as we move this bill forward, I said in transportation many times. This bill needs work, but nobody's came. Now, I do appreciate the input I'm hearing here from Representative Elkins and everybody. And you know what? This bill's going back to transportation. So I encourage everybody, let's sit down. My door's open. I guess my cubicle door, however we want to call it, is open.
Person Joy, you don't have a door.
No. I like to pretend. It's a cubicle door. Okay.
Figuratively, yeah. A door.
To come and visit and talk about this moving forward. You know, and so, yeah. Thank you.
Person of Elkins.
Yeah, continuing. It says, what bothers me is that it, a lot of the numbers that appear in these bills, they appear to have just kind of been pulled out of the air. And I would expect the author to be able to provide a rational explanation for why it is, it's exactly 74% and 26%. But we'll move on from there. So Section 9 of the bill calls for a motor vehicle registration tax analysis, looking at how other states surrounding us calculate theirs, and requires a legislative report by January 15th, 2026. But, you know, I can tell you right now that Wisconsin, they charge a flat $85 fee. Iowa has a structure not too dissimilar from ours that's based on the original manufacturer's suggested retail price, the age of the vehicle plus 40 cents per pound. North Dakota has and South Dakota both have charges based on weight and age as well. I'm a little bit puzzled what we would expect driver and vehicle services to come back for us in the way of recommendations. So all of these structures, including ours, reflect a certain set of values and analysis. And I don't know what we would be expecting DVS to come back to us and recommend to us, other than just a description of what other states around us are doing, which we pretty much already know. So what is the point of this study?
Representative Joy.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative.
Excuse me, though, first. Representative Elkins, you said some of these are based on weight.
Yeah, Iowa and Iowa, North Dakota, and South Dakota all have a small weight factor.
That's discrimination. Representative Joy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Elkins.
I can't get you.
Or Representative Elkins. To do a study, I think this is good. And something the legislator don't do a lot. I mean, it seems like we do study things, but we don't. You know, a 36% increase when we're talking about the cost of eggs, what it's affecting people's household budgets, 36% last year. $18.5 billion surplus with $10 billion in tax increases, and we have roads and bridges that are failing. We could take that $12 billion they talk about, our one-time aid, and move it for fixing these. That's what we decided. That's what the Democrats decided last year. You know, so a study would be okay, probably very reasonable, but I think it'd be something for us to look at this. Thank you.
Representative Elkins.
Okay. Third subject, Article 12 repeals the retail delivery fee, and a little bit of background on this one. So last session, Chair Frank Hornstein heard from, you know, the townships, the small cities in particular, that they didn't think it was fair, and I don't think it's fair, that the townships and small cities are excluded for funding out of the highway user tax distribution fund. Those funds, which are mostly come from excise taxes, gas taxes, registration fees that are constitutionally dedicated to the highway user tax distribution fund. And can only be used for roads and bridges, and there is a allocation formula that says that MnDOT gets this much and the counties get this much, cities over 5,000 get this much. So to remedy that gap, he set up the Transportation Advancement Fund as a way, in part, to make sure that that townships and small cities could get had a source of funding, and of course, then it had to come from revenue sources that were not dedicated to the highway user distribution fund, and the retail delivery fee was just such a fee, and creates a large part of the revenue going into that fund. So when we're, if you eliminate that fee, then you kick out the underpinnings of the creation of that fund, and now we're seeing all of these different contortions to try and backfill it in the A13 amendment. And that's just, and then as part of that now in this amendment, saying that that metro counties cannot at all, don't get any allocation out of that fund, as Representative Gomez pointed out, you're just making this more and more complicated and less equitable. So that's more of a comment, I guess, than a question. But
if the
author would like to respond, that would be fine.
Any comments, Representative Joy? Okay. Let's go to Representative Norris, Lee Hansen, then I have the department, Gomez, and Joy. Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Davids. And I want to thank Representative Joy for bringing this bill forward because it gives me an opportunity to talk about my favorite topic, Highway 65. I thought those days were gone when I left the Transportation Committee, but we're getting another chance here. And, I'm not any more excited than anybody else about paying, any of these various forms of taxes, but I also understand that that's how we collectively pay for the things that we need as a society. And so when I showed up here in 2023 and did serve on the Transportation Committee, it was very clear that there was a need for additional transportation revenue in the state. Representative Joaquin mentioned the grades that we got on our roads and bridges. There was another estimate that said that Minnesota faces a $30 billion funding shortfall for our roads and bridges over the next 20 years. And so as someone who's got three major highways that run through my district, that was incredibly alarming. I have Highway 65, which is the most dangerous stretch of highway in the metro area. And thanks to these revenue sources that we put in place in 2023, we had the expanded trunk highway bonding capacity to pay for upgrades to four of those most dangerous intersections. But there's still more needs. Looking a couple years down the road, we're going to be coming back with what the engineers are estimating is probably going to be north of $250 million request to address the interchange between Highway 65 and Highway 10. And that all is just in my house district, not to mention the needs throughout the rest of the state. And so I guess, I'm just wondering how you can tell me that cutting, as this bill would, $140 million or so from highway funding over just the next 4 years is the responsible thing to do.
Representative Joy.
Thank you, Chair Davids. And thank you, Representative Norris. Again, this bill's a work in progress. The delivery fee, I understand that, but the delivery fee, is something that was put into here that is affecting everybody. When Lead Gomez brought up the, Meals on Wheels program, put into here, relying on the delivery fee that is underperforming. We're willing to gamble to have that underperform. We should make that a separate bill and solid so those seniors get their meals. We shouldn't be putting it in a bill that could underperform. We should make sure that it's solid funding always there. When we continue to put these fees on and we talk about the cost of eggs and everything, that's my problem. When we're continually going after and putting the fee on for all across the board, the lower income are going in, they're feeling this, and everybody. We have to fund. But last year, we keep hearing the $18.5 billion surplus was $12 billion of one-time money. Why didn't we take the $12 billion of one-time money and move it into the transportation account if it's been so underfunded? So when we had an $18.5 billion surplus and raised taxes, $10 billion, and they still need more money, how much does Minnesota need to raise on a surplus to be able to get these highways to where they are? And when we talk about these projects and this fund we have and the greenhouse gas mitigation bills moving through that the county engineers have told us when they're building new highways can cost 25 to 40% more in just county engineer fees because having to mitigate that bill? Are we serious about building roads or do we want to watch North Dakota build an 8-lane on I-94 and come into Minnesota where we can't afford to do it is what I've been told by MnDOT because of this 40% to 25% increase on this bill that's moving through? That bill should probably be slowed down then if we need money out of these accounts, because that's going to add 25 to 40%.
Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Davids, and thank you, Representative Joy. I guess, I heard a lot about, Meals on Wheels and not a lot about highways in that answer. But I guess if I had to summarize it, your proposal is we should just be taking this money from the general fund, which ignores the precedent under both Democrats and Republicans for decades in this state in terms of how we've funded transportation. And the reason for that is because we know we're always going to have these transportation infrastructure needs, and there's other really compelling needs with our general fund. You mentioned the one-time funding. I mean, that was how we sent $300 million in public safety aid that I authored to our cities and counties in 2023 that was desperately needed. So I guess, as I look at the needs of my district and the transportation infrastructure in my district, the danger that it presents to people on a daily basis, I can't see this level of cut, $140 million from our highways over the next 4 years, being responsible.
Thank you, Representative Norris. Okay, since we have floor session at noon, we'll be adjourning today's session at about 10:02 so we can get over to the floor in time. And then for tomorrow, it'll be my intention to take up the Davids bill, the Norris bill, and then we'll finish up the Joy bill. We have till midnight, so I am going to call for a vote at midnight tomorrow night. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. I will try to be as fast as possible to not delay the vote to midnight. I wanted to respond to a couple points and also remind us of what Ms. Madden testified to earlier. But first, I think there was a comment earlier about talking about this bill and helping the author improve it. And so I think that the two important things that we brought up today was that there is this devastating cut to Meals on Wheels when the federal funding for Meals on Wheels is kind of questionable right now. And so in case Rep. Joy doesn't know, Meals on Wheels is funded by both federal and state funds. We supplement this program with state funds because we've decided at the legislature that this is a worthy program to fund. And so, it's not that we're just using this delivery fee to pay for meals, right? It's supplementing it and expanding a program from the federal government. And so, I think for me, what is troubling is to hear that, none of us on this side of the aisle are working with the author to improve it. But, this bill had a previous committee stop, and, there were two really important amendments that were not adopted. And so, Rep. Joy, we can have conversations in cubicles, but, we're offering these amendments in committee because we want you to adopt them. And I note that there was an amendment to fund Meals on Wheels, and there was also an amendment to redistribute the cuts to transportation funding across the state. These were not adopted. We had three amendments presented today. Those changes were not adopted. But again, really important things that we've brought up in this committee because, those ideas were not adopted in the last stop. And so it's not because we're not trying to help make this bill better. And I think that's really important because, one way of thinking of how Ms. Madden talked about this is a massive wealth transfer to the richest 20% of senior households in Minnesota. And so, when we talk about helping make lives more affordable, again, this bill does not help low-income seniors, many of whom live in my district. And again, their only asset is their house, right? And so they already are not paying taxes on Social Security. We have, again, this discussion about backfilling Meals on Wheels and funding to our states and counties, our cities and counties, with sales tax. But again, in this committee, we've talked about how that is incredibly regressive and not something that we want to do. And so I just want to remind folks of what Ms. Madden said, that this doesn't help 80% of people who are on Social Security. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Lee said a lot of what I'm thinking, and I said this last time about the Social Security tax cuts. I think it is completely out of touch politics to continue to propose this over and over again like this when, we've been sitting in this committee, it's our third week here, and I would love to get to work on bills that are actually going to pass and become law, that actually came up at the doors, that actually, will make an impact on the young families in Minnesota who are asking for that. A delivery fee is not breaking my bank right now at all. And I'm really curious where you find the audacity to bring a bill like this forward without addressing what millions of Minnesotans are talking about. This does not address it. And to Representative Lee's point about us working with you, Representative Joy, this is your bill that you're proposing. If you want to work it and you want to work with Democrats and you want to make it bipartisan, it's your job to come to our cubicles or our offices and to ask us or to adopt amendments in committee. But the fact of the matter is this doesn't have the votes. This will not become law. And like I said, I'd love to get to work on stuff that Minnesotans actually want us to work on. I mean, the premise has already been covered. Cutting Meals on Wheels? Representative Joy cut Meals on Wheels. That's going to be the lit. And you have to be honest about that. Is that really what you want to go back to your community and say? I don't. I'm not going to. There's no way I can say that to my people. And I'm new on this committee, and I've been really excited to hear about tax proposals that are going to actually help working families, and I've yet to see one. So I hope that if you do continue to work on this, you know where to find me. I'm happy to tell you what I think you could do better on this. It's not cutting food for Meals on Wheels and devastating our transportation budget for the entire 7-county metro area. 10% of the nation's grain travels through my district from the ports of Savage. If I don't have roads and bridges that can get out, we don't get to feed the nation. So there's a lot of implications to what you're seeing here. I think the biggest takeaway is gutting the 7-county metro area, to Representative Gomez's point. That's unacceptable. You have got to find a better way to do that, because we fund so much stuff out of state from this area. So that's my comment on it. If you want us to work with you, then you need to work with us too.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair. Many of my colleagues have said some excellent things. I want to bring up in the context of this bill something we hear a lot in this committee, which is we want money to be in the pockets of individuals, that people know how to spend their own money. And of course, part of our tax principles is fairness, and discussing and figuring out in this committee what is a fair tax. But this bill illustrates, I think, something quite clearly, which is that individuals and individual families cannot, out of their own pockets and in their own budgets, pay for the things that make our life livable. Things like highways and bridges, things like food going to our grandparents when they're not living close to us, that we can do it ourselves. I am not a 7-county metro representative. I represent Rochester. In this amendment that I voted against, my city probably would get some more funding for some roads and bridges in our district, which would be great. But I also have family that live in the 7-county metro district. They actually live in Representative Johnson's district, where under this proposal, their roads and bridges get no funding. And when I drive my niece and nephew to their grandparents' house, I now don't know if the roads are going to be safe. And I can't pay for that out of my pocket, even if you're cutting some of my small delivery fee taxes that I'm paying, cents. I can't confirm that. Individual families can't. But we collectively can as a state. That's what we talk about when we're talking about taxes. And there's difficult discussions to be made about what is fair, what's the right amount. We can have that discussion. But to just cut it completely, and to just constantly say that taxes need to be lower without understanding what services they pay for, like roads that we use every single day, is irresponsible, just as this bill is irresponsible. I will be voting no on it.
Okay, we have a couple choices here. I have, does the department wish to weigh in at this point? I have Gomez and Joy. We probably could get it out unless you want to continue talking. Representative Gomez?
I'll be quick.
Let's
go.
Thank
you. I'll be quick, Mr. Chair. I just find it really interesting that we had a conversation, or a comment at least, about redistribution on the previous bill on House File 9. Because what is this? What is this but redistribution of tax revenue collected from the 55% of the population of Minnesota that lives in the 7-county metro area to everybody else? Representative Joy is not proposing that my constituents and three of the reps on the other side, you have constituents in the seven county metro area. Representative Joy is not saying, Representative Robbins, that our constituents don't have to pay the blackout plate, the double EV surcharge, you know, these additional fees, since we're being cut out of the proceeds. We still have to pay into those. You and I do, and our constituents do. Redistribution for me, but not for thee, like that's what this is about. We're one state. We're in this together. That's what we're all kind of talking about, you know, especially in the tax committee. It's like we all have our parochial interests when we come in here, but like the tax system is for everybody. You know, the funding that we need to fund the basic things that everybody needs, their needs across the state. You know, this just picks winners and losers really clearly. And is that for us? That's okay. Okay, we're like, it's a Pavlovian response. We'll have to. Supposed to be somewhere.
I'm gonna start jumping up and down.
I know, right? So yeah, I mean, we've gone over this. The idea of having our half of the state still have to pay into this account and get no benefits from it, when we all know, because we drive around these roads, that there are major needs in our communities, the idea that we would zero out Meals on Wheels, critical, like, basic support for the lowest income seniors, the idea that we would take this, we're blowing it's almost $2 billion hole in the side of our budget in this. But Representative Hansen made a point. This is going absolutely nowhere. This is such a big bill, Mr. Chair, that it almost deserves a song. You know the Talking Heads? 1980, Road to Nowhere. I think this deserves the Road to Nowhere
more like
song.
Highway to. Oh, no.
See, no. You said it, not me. No. But, you know, again, this bill is like seriously flawed, not a serious effort to solve the major problems that we have across our state. And we all know, if you send transportation funding to the general fund, it's up against seniors, the disabled, and babies, and it will always lose. And so we need to be serious as policymakers about how to meet our infrastructure needs, and this is not it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Wrap up.
Roll call?
Oh, we'd like a roll call.
Okay, there will be a roll call. Representative Joy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess to wrap this up, I just want everybody to look at this KSTP survey. Number 13, talking about fully eliminating Social Security tax. 69% of the people say we should. 62% were Democrats that said that when you read through this report. And then when you look on the next page, it talks about eliminating the fuel tax inflator. Number 12, 67% of the people say that the legislator should be approving that inflator. 63% of that were Democrats and 70% were Republicans. So I just like to use these reports when we get them and we get them in our packets to look at what the people are saying in Minnesota, what they want us to do as legislators. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Joy. Representative Joy moves House File 5 as amended be sent to the Committee on Transportation. A roll call has been requested. The Committee Legislative Assistant will take the roll.
Davids?
Aye.
Joy?
Aye.
Gomez?
No.
Anderson?
Aye.
Elkins?
No.
Freiberg?
No.
Hansen?
No.
Carter?
Aye.
Purr?
No.
Hewitt?
No.
Johnson?
Aye.
Kozlowski?
No.
Lee?
No.
Roach?
Aye.
Robbins?
Aye.
Schwartz?
Aye.
Schwartz?
Oh, aye.
Smith?
No.
Stevenson?
No.
Swedinsky?
Aye.
Warwas?
Aye.
Wiener?
Aye.
Witte?
Aye.
Wyakim?
No.
There being 12 ayes and 11 noes, the motion to send House File 5 as amended to transportation is passed. Members, good government all the time. We are adjourned.